Good morning, Al Batt.
Hey, good morning. Good morning, everyone. Hope you're having just the nicest day. Man, it is so incredibly nice out. The sun is shining. The birds are singing. I've got a huge flock of red-winged blackbirds in my yard, and they're noisy, I guess would be the polite way, but they seem to really be enjoying themselves and happy to be back in Minnesota, so I welcome them. I took the mail down. They paid no attention to me whatsoever. They had a lot of other things going on, but it's just, I'm so happy to see them. And I should mention, I know I have said this before, but tomorrow I'm going to be in St. Peter, and I've been telling everybody it's at the library, but it's tomorrow, March 13th at 2 p.m. in room 219 of the St. Peter Community Center. So I just got a note from them saying, please note that the program will not be at the library, but in the adjacent building. So it's 601 South Washington in St. Peter, and it's a beautiful place. It's if you make it to the library, you can walk right into the St. Peter Community Center. Also, thanks to all the kids at Bethany and all the good folks at Good Sam for allowing me to babble with them. I went out last week, I checked the lilacs. And the buds had swollen, but I saw no sign of early bud break on mine. So, you know, lilac buds are, they're big, and they're beautiful, and they're tough, and I think they're used to this kind of weird weather, and I think they'll be fine. I watched the Vermilion South Dakota Tanagers play basketball, and that fine nickname led them to a state championship. I think the secret was they were the Tanagers. And I enjoyed seeing a northern harrier. It's a slim, long-tailed hawk gliding low over a grassland while holding its wings in a V shape, and it sports a white patch at the base of the tail. If I'd been closer, I could have seen its owlish face, which helps it hear mice and voles. And when I was a lad, it was called a marsh hawk, as it hunted over agricultural land, marshes, and shrubby wetlands. Its floating flight has given rise to the male's nickname, the gray ghost, and it's just really neat to see them. A listener said the swans have returned to Coach Light Ponds in Henderson on Monday, and that the past flowers were in bloom Sunday at the Rush River Park near Henderson. Mitch Routh. Mitch is from New Richland, and he is a township grader operator. So he's out there pushing snow around and grading roads. He said that this year was the first time he's ever bladed gravel roads in February.
Wow.
He's usually out there pushing snow around. But he said this year, and he said it worked really well. The gravel just, it was easy to grade and graded well.
So I am wondering if it's going to impact the potholes. You know, I haven't really seen many potholes. Like last year, I swear there was one every 2 feet. And this year, you know, we haven't had that real hard freeze and thaw and freeze and thaw. So I'm wondering if this may be a better year for no potholes.
I think was it January, the middle of January anyway, they said that some of the frost at the Waseca Experiment Station. And I know that's not the whole correct title anymore, but I've been calling it the experiment station all my life. Was 15 inches, I think, was
wow.
Like the deepest they found. But a friend, Brandon Brackey, called, and he got his little boy a metal detector. It's a kid's metal detector, but it actually detects metal, as you might expect it would. So now he is a metal detectorist. But he was finding, this was a week or two ago, he was finding earthworms 3 inches down. So there couldn't have been much frost there. And you can look for pocket gopher mounds, and that's one way when you're driving around you can tell that the frost is out of the ground, because the pocket gophers start making those mounds on top of the ground. Cindy Drill of North Mankato said on March 3rd, red-winged blackbirds returned to Spring Lake Park in North Mankato. A Canada geese seem to be choosing to remain in the vicinity of Hinnaker Pond, although they're resting flocks of ducks and geese at various times in both waters. Busy flow of eagles passing over. At one point saw seven mature birds flying over the bluffs and water with additional sightings as we moved along. Steve Bremer. Steve is from Lake City, and he's a dairy farmer, so we have a lot to talk about. Who would have dreamed he'd see so many bald eagles in a year as he has this year. Michael Bonner, a good guy from Cortland, says, I remember flocks of starlings when I lived in the UK, that was pre-1983, and wondered how they fly so close to each other yet they never collide. Who's in charge? Who decides which way they will fly? Anyway, in the 30-odd years I've been a Minnesota River Valley rat, I could almost count the number of starlings I've seen on both hands, and yet you infer there are flocks in southern Minnesota. How come I've never seen them? It's because where I live, the starlings' favorite food is not available. Slim pickings indeed. Yeah, who knows, man, when I heard from Michael, I had 30-some at my suet feeder, just attacking my suet feeder. I sent Michael a picture of my bird water that was just filled with starlings. So I think the reason that Michael doesn't have any is because I have all of them here. There must be something about Michael's yard, or maybe Cortland in general, I don't know, that they don't like. How do they fly in those murmurations without running into one another? Flying? Well, the scientists have studied that, and they say they have this amazing ability to see all the birds around them. And boy, if only we could all do that when we're driving car, wouldn't that be wonderful if we could see everything that's all the way around? I mean, we check our mirrors, and we look, we swivel our heads, but we still can't. When we're behind those big trucks, it's as if we can't see, if you can't see us up here, you know, we can't see you if you're in that blind spot. So starlings don't have that blind spot. They can see all the other birds. So if one moves a little bit to the right, they move a little bit to the right because they can sense that. It's just a superpower is what it is, Michael. They have this great superpower. We can't even do that during marathon races and things. You know, we can't see the person next to us at all times. You know, like I've ran so many marathons. But we don't have that ability. Jennifer and Lily Wells said, Jennifer and Lily from Wells, I don't mean to make that their last name, great to hear from you, Jennifer and Lily, said, we've been hearing what sounds like a bird calling out at night, and we don't know what it is. It doesn't sound like what we think an owl sounds like. Do owls only say who, or do they have other calls? Are there other birds that call out at night? Again, we're in Wells. It's an odd thing that owls make a lot of different sounds. There's screech owls that make whinnying sounds, and they make all different kinds of sounds. They will pop their bill when they're irritated with something or another owl. The young great horned owls will scream or screech, so there's all different kinds of sounds made. Typically here we have great horned owls, barred owls, B-A-R-R-E-D, and screech owls, and they all make a series of different sounds. So if you hear something in the night, usually it's an owl, but we also have deer that make sort of they'll make a snorting sound, a coughing sound, foxes will bark, coyotes will make sounds. Loons, when they're around, will make sounds. We don't get many chats here, but they'll make sounds at night. We used to have more whippoorwills than we have now. They make sounds at night. If we get in areas that have mockingbirds, I have been in the company of a mockingbird that sang all night long. Catbirds sometimes here. We don't have them back yet, but they will start singing because one sings in the arborvitae by my bedroom window, and it's not light yet when it starts firing up its songs. On occasion, I hear a robin when it's still dark. On a moonlit night, the roosters crow. The neighbor has chickens, and they will crow sometimes. Artificial light will cause birds sometimes to utter things. Sometimes birds and things will make sounds because they're disturbed at night. And I saved the most pitiful sound to last, and that's the sound that a bunny makes when it's running into a predator.
The bunny sound when you hit it with the mower is horrible.
Oh, it's just
awful. It's like a scream. I did that once accidentally, and I felt so bad for the longest time.
Oh, it's just a sad sound, and they just, you know, it's funny. Rabbits will fight with one another, but apparently they will not fight with a predator or anything. But I think tame rabbits will probably take a hunk out of an owner's finger or something once in a while, because they're a little different than our wild rabbits. Dale Waltz of Rochester said seeing sandhill cranes. George Heliker, who emails from Puget Sound in Washington, and he sent me photos of chestnut-backed chickadees, one of my favorite birds on earth, and also leucistic juncos and robins. Lynn Wasmone of Mansfield also sent pictures of a leucistic robin. And in this case, it was sort of a piebald. We used to call them partial albino, and maybe we will again, and piebald. If we saw a deer, we'd say it was piebald, but that's how this robin that Lynn sent a photo of. Amos Vogel of Morgan says, I was fortunate to see a pileated woodpecker. It's hanging out in a tree by the road. What an awesome sight to see one sitting still and not just airborne. Says, we are lucky to see them fairly often flying where I live. Brenda Katasik of St. Peter said she saw a sandhill crane on Sunday morning by Coach Light Pond. Jim Myers of Mankato said, it occurred to us that as of March 10th, we have not seen any robins here in Mankato. The ground has been bare most of the winter, yet at our house and around town, we haven't seen any. I seem to remember robins showing up in late February, early March, and foraging between patches of melted snow. I am hesitant to write because your phone may light up with people in Mankato saying they have 100 robins in their yard, and they have been here since Christmas. Anyway, is our memory bad? Do we have ants in our pants about seeing robins? I told Jim that I had 3 in my yard and that I would send them over. I told him I'd send one over. Well, I went out later and I only had 1, so 2 of them headed for Jim's house. Jim, I heard from Rita Goranson right after I heard from you. She lives in Mason City, so a little way south of us. She said this past week, robins began to pour into the area, and also killdeer and eastern meadowlarks. Saw 14 species of ducks. Ringbill gulls in huge numbers are here with a few herring gulls. Sandhill cranes are back. There was a snipe along the creek. A flock of 25 Eurasian tree sparrows were hanging out at a culvert. They were there on and off all winter. At Nagel Preserve in Floyd County, there have been several Eurasian tree sparrows seen in with a flock of house sparrows. And that's me talking here. That's how I usually find them. Back to Rita. She said a bluebird has claimed a box already, and one rusty blackbird was seen in a fast-moving flock of redwings. Not much for other sparrows. We usually have a few song or white-throated stick around in the winter, but nothing this year. I read this just to let you know, Jim, I guess that the cavalry's on the way. So I'm hoping you have robins today. I have a huge flock of red-winged blackbirds in the yard here that are just, they're joyful is what they are. The good book says to make a joyful noise, and they're making it. I know some people say it's a little harsh to the ear, but to them it's joyful. March 3rd will be recorded as the date the ice completely melted on Fountain Lake in Albert Lea in 2024. That's setting a new record for the earliest the ice has ever melted on the lake since records began being kept in 1912. And this is according to Mark Malepsi, who he's the annual watcher of the lake and my barber, where I learn a lot of things in that barbershop. And his barbershop is called Bill and Mark's Barbershop, named after his late father and Mark. And he said the last ice melted noon on Sunday at the Brookside Channel near St. Theodore Catholic Cemetery. Aside from the Brookside Channel, the other last location for ice was Dane Bay. The previous record for earliest ice out was March 7th in 2000. The latest was April 27th, way back in 1951 and 2018.
Okay, so to make sure all the ice is off, does he go out and paddle around to make sure there's no ice on the lake? Or how do you tell it? I mean, because, you know, lakes can be pretty big.
Yeah, I know when Pop Murtaugh began that in 1912, he had boats, and he'd go out and check it all. I think Mark does most of his by driving and walking in all the areas. And there's certain places where through all these years they kind of know that the ice hangs around. So like this Dane Bay and some of these places he can look. So, and last year, when did it go out? April 11th. So March 3rd this year, April 11th last year.
Hey, Al, I got a note here, a text from one of our listeners referred to, good morning, Karen, this is the kid here. I don't know who the kid is, but hello, kid. I would be interested to know if pheasants roost at night or do they sleep on the ground? Could you please ask Al that? Thanks.
Yeah, the ones in, I have them in my yard. And I know because we have a wild turkey that has become a watch turkey in our yard, a female. And she's clucking now, and the neighbors have domestic turkeys, and they're gobbling. So I think she goes over there every day just to see what's up with that, with those domestic gobbling at her. But she does not like pheasants, so she chases them around. And it's tough on the pheasants because they roost in my yard, and they roost in the evergreens. They love flying up there, and in most winters it gets them out of the snow and the cold so they can be up there. And they like the evergreens because the turkey also roosts in this evergreen. And I can walk down there unless I know right where she's roosting. I cannot see her up in there. She gets by the trunk of the tree. And it's just a perfect spot. So pheasants like that too. And it makes a perfect spot. Do they roost on the ground? Yeah, they will. Their roost sites in areas of short to medium height grass or weeds, they'll spend the night there. They like marshes, cattail marshes, so they can get in there also. So it'd be maybe a little later now they'll start doing more of that where they have that kind of cover available. They've lost a lot of their cattail marshes through the years. So, but they like roosting in trees, and I can't blame them a bit. I'd like being up there too, because you got coyotes and raccoons and who knows what, dogs. You got all these other things down on the ground, so I'd want to be high in a tree as far up as I can, where you might still have to deal with what, great horned owls. That would be the big thing up there that you'd have to worry about. But they do roost in trees, but also in areas with thick shrubbery. So great question, kid. Appreciate you. Roger Davidson sent me an article from the Washington Post, and this person is walking into the forest with a churchgoer's reverence, I guess would be the polite way to say it. And the University of BC, she's an ecologist, and she sees the trees as a source of oxygen, a filter for water, and a home for hundreds of different creatures. And to her, the lush, multi-layered understory is a proof of a thriving community where a variety of species ensure that every wavelength of light is put to a good use. And she cannot hear the conversation, but she says she knows that the trees, the trees are in communion with everything beneath their feet. So things underground, they're bartering carbon for water and nutrients in a raucous exchange older than the forests themselves. So there's like, she says there's like, she doesn't say this, but I'd say it, like a stock exchange going on underground. The Hormel Nature Center in Austin on Saturday, let's see, March 16th, they at 1:30, they're having a Friends maple syruping class. So they ask that you RSVP, and of course I don't have the number for Hormel Nature Center, but you can find it pretty easily. So please do that. They do a great job over there, and who doesn't like maple syrup? I know there's somebody out there that doesn't or is allergic to it or something, but
my son has wildlife ecology class, and the teacher, Julia Battern, takes the kids from class out to the little woods behind East High School, and they actually tap trees, and they actually got to, as a class project, make maple syrup, and then they had pancakes and used it. And now he's never tried maple syrup, but all of a sudden, now he's using maple syrup at home. Isn't that kind of cool?
Oh, I tell this story often. We grew up having Cairo or sugar syrup, where mom would mix sugar up and make a syrup out of that. And then we got maple syrup one day, and man, we didn't want Cairo or that other stuff ever again. We were all in on maple syrup. And Julia, what a wonderful job she does with the kids, and it was fun hearing about her trip to Antarctica, and she's just a wonderful teacher.
She is really an amazing teacher that really cares about the kids and what she's teaching. Hey, I just got an email from our friend Micah, and Micah says, let's see, robins galore in South Bend Township. Well, cool.
And Micah, please send some of them over to Jim Myers. And I'm sure Jim has them. And like he said, I know you'll hear from everybody that has hundreds of them. But I hope they've made it to Jim's place, because he deserves robins, I think so. A listener just said, is there a field guide that covers the great outdoors, and underline the. So, that would take a gigantic book to cover everything.
Yeah.
But there is one I recommend, and it's called the Kaufman Field Guide to Nature of the Midwest. And I hope I get the authors right. It's Ken Kaufman and his wife, Kimberly. And then I believe it's Jeffrey Sayer is the third author. And it's a field guide that helps identify, birds, mammals, trees, wildflowers, insects, reptiles, amphibians, fish, spiders, mushrooms, ferns, grasses, the sky overhead, and the rocks underfoot. And I hope I didn't repeat anything too many times there. So it's something you can use when you're walking in the woods, camping, hiking, canoeing, enjoying your backyard, or just keep it in the car. And it's easy to use. It's for nature enthusiasts living in or visiting Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan. So it's a wonderful guide. It can't go into great detail in anything, because there's just not enough room. But it does a wonderful job helping us to ID things. And it'll tilt towards the more common, because that's what we're looking up. We're looking up the more common. So it's a wonderful guide. I highly recommend it. And it can be found in your better bookstores everywhere. So Ken and Kim are really wonderful people. I know both of them quite well. I do not know Jeff Sayer, I don't think. And if I do, I apologize for saying I don't know him. That happens in life sometimes. You say, Bob, I don't think I know him. And it turns out to be, like your cousin or something that you've known all your life. And say, that Bob, well, of course I know him. So the last question I have is, what is eating the bark of my maple tree? Dun, 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 dun. It's that time of year, and we get to see scattered maple trees that are stripped of bark, usually on the small branches or the twigs. Somebody said, I'll bet it's porcupines. Well, maybe up north, but down here, not so much. Squirrels cause this damage. And
what do they do with it? Yeah.
They are in pursuit of the cambium layer, which is just under the bark, and it tastes slightly sweet from the sap.
Syrup.
So we're not the only ones out there tapping maple trees to get to the sap. Squirrels are doing the same thing. And maybe that's how people learned how to do that way back when. They said, what are the squirrels after up there? And they tasted it and said, hey, smooth bark is easier for squirrels to chew. So young trees or branches with thin bark are more likely to be stripped than trees with older furrowed bark. And, of course, when they cut that off, then it leaves, it looks like white, a white strip. Can they girdle that? Yeah, they sure could.
And so then your tree's dead, basically.
Well, at least that branch would be, or that twig.
But if they went all the way around the bottom of the tree and girdled it, it would be done.
On the young trees, they sure can do it. Yeah. And I grew up on a farm where we had, it was an oak maple forest. And so this time of year, we had little maple trees just growing everywhere. And one of the reasons a lot of them did not make it after they made it to a fairly good height was that the squirrels would go out there and eliminate them by doing that. So, and it was, you know, I'm sure the squirrels would want them to hang around, but it just didn't work out.
I've got a text from our friend John, so I want to make sure to get that in.
Sure.
This is Almost Comedy by John. I was in a revolving door and thought, I'll push it for a while to make it easier for others. I started to think, I'm going in circles and not going very far, which is like real life sometimes. Then I thought, I'm the start of a revolution. So start your own revolution and help someone in a small way. Have a good day and a better tomorrow from our friend John.
And thank you, John. Great to hear from you. And I remember as a kid going to, we didn't get to those big department store kind of things that had escalators. So, of course, I went up and down on that escalator. You know, that was what I did while my mom was shopping. And the other thing some of them had was a revolving door. And, boy, for a kid, that was like being on a merry-go-round. You just got in there and went around and around and around till some grown up kind of took you by the ear and said, you need to get out of here before you hurt yourself or somebody else. But
well, you mentioned the
entertainment.
I was going to say, when you mentioned the escalator things, I was always terrified it was going to suck me under and I'd be like squeezed in there underneath and I'd, you know, be flat as a pancake. It was always my fear. So it always took me a long time to get on because I'd be like, I got to get this just right or it's going to suck me under. Anyway, that was one of my weird, irrational fears back when I was a kid.
It was better than the fair rides, I thought, that escalator. It was, Skinner Chamberlain, I think, was the name of the store. I hope I got that right, in beautiful downtown Albert Lea. And like I say, we didn't get there very often, but when we did, I'd separate myself from the pack and go off and ride that escalator. And it was so cool coming up there, and you just come up to this new horizon, and it would open up, and I just thought it was the greatest thing. Hey, man, thanks, everybody, for sitting on the front porch with us. You know, after I told him I'd rather hypnotize chickens than play golf, a friend said, what are you talking about, hypnotizing chickens? Well, all I needed to do was hold the chicken's head down against the ground and then draw a straight line using a stick or my finger in the dirt. I'd start at the beak and I'd extend it straight outward in front of the chicken. And if done correctly, the chicken was put into a trance and remained still. And to dehypnotize the chicken, I either gave it a gentle push or clapped my hands. Other methods included swirling a finger in a circle around the bird's head or tucking its head underneath its wing. Ernest Hemingway mentioned the latter method in his book, The Dangerous Summer. comparing it to the hypnotic effect of a bullfighter's cape. The parlor trick did neither the chicken nor I any good, so I've stopped hypnotizing chickens. I guess I can say I failed the hen trance exam, so I apologize for that. Hey, thanks everybody for listening. Remember, Heartland is well worth driving past. Get out there and do something wild today. Look at a bird. And Karen, thanks as always for your wonderful company.
Al, great to chat with you. We will talk to you next week, all right?
Sounds good.
All right,
thanks.
Bye-bye.